see from these people that deflect the whole white nationalist rally. One minute they're talking about, well, it was the alt left, and then the next minute they're talking about, well, the Democrats founded the KKK, as if, you know, to remove all historical context behind that statement. They're always going to move the goalpost. From a political standpoint, black people would be Republicans if Republicans didn't actively go and recruit white Democrats, white Southern Democrats that were upset at the fact that they passed the civil rights movement.
Because here's the thing, like, there's like, okay, and that's why I said it's not the two sides on left and right. There's nothing inherently wrong with being a Republican at their core, like conservative, like fiscally or whatever. But when you take the history, the long history of Republicans and who they are, and I don't mean by the name, I mean those conservative values, you know, going from Democrats right. to Democrats.
Yeah, let's remove political parties from it. We're talking about
right.
So, ideology.
Conservatives.
Ideology. So when you take the core of their beliefs, that in with the fiscal conservativeness and what that represents to our nation, how, you know, they basically control everything economically, then yeah, it does become race. And that's the thing. Racism isn't just, I see a black person, I dislike you. No, racism is that classism based upon race that is meant to make sure no one excels above the white man.
Don't call it a podcast. I've been here for years.
TheKidsWearCrowns.com.
Sipping on this yak, I ain't got a chase. You know where we at? Name the time and place, I'm finna kill this shit. I ain't trying to catch a case. Man, you know I be around, I ain't never backing down. Cause it's a go, 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 go. Hey man, tell him it's a go, 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 go. Hey man, tell him it's a go, 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 go. Man, you know I be around, I ain't never backing down. Hey. Niggas already know it's me.
That's right.
Niggas already know it's P. Okay. They know I'm about to kill the shit. I'm talking murder red to the first degree. Man, won't you tell me who cold like me? Split everything from the soul like me. Turn everything into gold like me. Middle finger to a nigga trying to flow like me. Nice got finished last. Guess I'm catching up. Just took her down, then kicked her out. Man, she bad as what? It's one big mind game. It's one big line game. I can't keep this line tame. Try to keep this line train. Cause I'm something like a beast that's just coming off his leash. If you ain't talking this money, no comprende. Capiche? Got this little Georgia thing. And my hands all on a bleach. And I hit it, now she gone. Hocus pocus, c'est la vie. Ghost. Sipping on this, yeah. I ain't got a chase. You know where we at? Name the time and place. I'm finna kill this shit. I ain't trying to catch a case. Man, you know I be around, I ain't never backing down. Cause it's a go, 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 go. Hey man, tell him it's a go, 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 go. Hey man, tell him it's a go, 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 go. Man, you know I be around, I ain't never backing down. Hey.
Lit. She got my soul lit. I'm so ripped. My drink come hold this like time of day. Every day party cake or the main part of me. I'm just trying to get this hang, roll it up. Blaze a thing like y'all can't flow like me. Typical rapper shit, and I didn't want to ask for it. But the way you hear the sound, it's sort of like I mastered it. But baby, it's quab on the mix. And when I move my tongue, when the rapper starts to spit, it's sort of sexual when the beat gets it in. So put your feet up and let your hips lock me in. Can I lay you down? I'm gon' pick you up. This glass is on the house, I'm gon' show you love. This right here's my couch, sit here, you might get stuck. We gon' take our time until you had enough. Sippin' on this yak, I ain't got a chase. You know where we at? Name the time or place. I'm finna kill the shit, ain't tryna catch a case. Man, you know I be around, I ain't never backing down. Cause it's a go, 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 go. Man, you know that it's a go, 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 go. Man, you know that it's a go, 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 go. Man, you know I be around, man, I'm never backing down. Yeah,
hey. So now I'm back on the track real quick. I'm about to snap on the track real quick. People can't believe Pat rap so sick. I could really rap in the alphabet like A is for acrobat.
acrobatic. B, cause I'm going bonkers. C, cause it's catastrophic. The D is just what she wanted. E is for everybody that F in the fucking front end. G, they can go to hell, cause I got just like what I wanted. H, just to get high because my blessings up. I, because I need all my investments up. The J, we gon' light it. K, let's go try it. Matter of fact, at the L, no fighting. M, cause I'm a motherfucking man in this bitch. And it's for the niggas that can handle the shit. Oh my gosh, I'm really going off. Patrick really about to set it up. Wait. Hold up, shot, Henny, Goose. Whatever don't matter, nigga, really you choose. Just know that you really about to lose. Cause me and my niggas are the truth. It's a go, 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 go. Man, we tell them it's a go, 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 go. Amen, tell them it's a go, 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 go. Man, you know I be around. I ain't never backing down,
We here, turn up, turn up.
AJ been drinking.
I have.
Which is perfect. I think it works well for what we're going to do today. So, Don't Call It a Podcast. Episode, we're on 21 now. But it's kind of inflated. Oh, it's kind of inflated because Hot Takes is kind of incorporated in that number. But either way, you know, Don't Call It a Podcast. Episode 21, man, It's a Friday night when we record this, which is how you know all three of us are washed, because we're all at home on Friday night to record a podcast. So, you know,
Ronnie's not really washed because Ronnie like told us to keep this at an hour. So obviously he has some non-washed shit to do after this. I'm on like, Eastern time, so it's really late for me.
Nah, Ron want to keep it hours like he's asleep.
Ronnie ain't going to sleep.
I mean,
you ain't going to sleep.
Oh, he's by himself.
Yeah, exactly.
You ain't going to sleep by yourself.
Shouts to McDeeters for the worry about yourself movement, but you ain't low. You ain't low, Ryan.
Maybe that's the shirt that we need to get, McDeeters.
That's the next shirt we need to make. Worry about yourself.
We gotta get these return shirts going. But anyway, all right. So there's a lot that happened this week. I don't even know how I want to get into it for real. But there's a lot of bullshit going on and needs to be addressed. Quite frankly, what happened in Charlottesville? White nationalists, aka Nazis, aka Klansmen, however you want to address them, gathered to march, chanting that they will not be replaced out in Charlottesville, Virginia, which is the same town that the University of Virginia resides in.
And my cousin is a teacher. He's a professor at the University of Virginia.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, first cuts. I won't say his name here. Because he's like respectable and all that good shit, but yeah, that was kind of scary.
Yeah, you don't want to tarnish his name by being associated with him.
Yeah, exactly. That was scary.
Yeah. But no, I mean, understandably so, because you have these people marching into town, and I mean, there's all the stuff that came out a little bit later that, you know, they found weapon caches and all that kind of stuff, but we'll get into that another time. But I guess, like, I'm angered out. Anybody that follows me on Facebook, follows me on Twitter, you've kind of seen how I felt about it, and I know a lot of us feel the same way, but I guess the question becomes, because they tried to assemble, what it was, 8 more protests or marchers or whatever they were, and some of them have quickly been shut down, specifically Texas A&M and Durham, North Carolina. But I mean, you had all kind of crazy stuff going on. You had the young lady got killed, Heather Heyer, is that how you pronounce her last name?
I think so.
Yeah. She was 32 years old, killed by white nationalists who hit her with a car. You know, you had President Dumbass making a statement about it being on both sides. Because right now I'm so dumbfounded on everything that's happened. So somebody give their piece on it. Give whatever's been on your chest.
This is utterly amazing to me simply because of the fact that this is America. And I can't say this enough to where somebody was asking about, you know, would you rather have a blatantly racist president versus someone that talks in code? And it's like, this is horrible, but it's good at the same time. Because now they can't say that we're tripping anymore. They can, but it's obvious you're full of shit if you say that we're tripping. We've been warning people about this shit for the longest. We wrote on this topic about why Donald Trump in the White House should scare anybody that is not a white person. And it's coming out. And my whole thing with it is you can see what's going on and you cannot care. That's cool. But you can't
deny it anymore.
You can't deny that this is that this is racism. It's at its peak right now. I mean, I try to not get on some militant shit where people can be recorded, but anybody that is not a white person,
specifically white male, because I mean,
because they gonna protect their white women regardless.
To an extent, I was gonna say,
they may not protect them through social programs, but they are physically going to protect their women. Anybody that is not a white person. Buy a firearm, buy a concealed weapons permit, and stock up on ammunition and learn how to use that shit. Real rap. Because the times like this, I am glad I live in the hood. Because I know good and goddamn well where I live, ain't no idiot white people finna come through here with a Confederate flag. But that don't mean that somebody might not try you when they out. These are not Bubba Ray. This ain't the rednecks that you think this is. These are the people you work with. These are the people that review your resumes. These are the police officers that pull you over. This is the district manager at your local retail chain. Like, these are your everyday white people. And this is why I've told people months before the election, America is dumber than you think. And this is proven. He has a 36% approval rating?
Yeah, let me piggyback off that. Like on Twitter, the question gets asked all the time, and it was getting asked last year: would you stop talking to someone if you found out their political beliefs? And I vehemently said, yes, I would. And people are like, oh, that's not fair. I mean, just because they vote for somebody, you know, doesn't mean this or that or whatever. But if you align yourself with someone who said they charged us. And when he said us, he meant the Nazis, the KKK, the white nationalists.
And how quickly he corrected that shit let you know that's exactly what he meant.
Right. Yep. So if you align yourself with that, and you could be white, black, Mexican, gay, straight, whatever. If you align yourself with that, then someone who wants to do harm to my people and people who, you know, who aren't white males, then... then yeah, we can't be friends. This is more than just politics now. Like, there are two sides, but it's not left and right. It's at this point, it's just flat out right and wrong. Like, that's the two sides, and you know where you stand. So either embrace that and recognize it, or you know, like, I just want people to look. America, you know, we can't advance as a nation until we basically cut out the bullshit and have a serious conversation, and we have to start stop lying to ourselves about this.
I mean, my thing
is, you have to stop saying, oh, go ahead.
I was gonna say, I mean, what used to bother the hell out of me, and it don't really bother me anymore because I've honestly stopped caring as far as this side is concerned. People out there who don't want to acknowledge what's going on aren't going to acknowledge what's going on. People out there who are stuck on the idea of the people I say all the time, and I had retweeted this from the Kids Wear Crowns account. Somebody was like, oh man, can I just not see politics? I just want to see one guy throw a football to another. Race ain't politics. But when you're somebody who's a white person who doesn't have to deal with that on a daily basis, that's what you see it as. And there's no amount of positioning for myself that can change that. You can see from these people that deflect the whole white nationalist rally. It went from, it was like the five stages of grief. One minute they're talking about, well, it was the alt left. And then the next minute they're talking about, well, the Democrats founded the KKK, as if, you know, to remove all historical context behind that statement. They're always going to move the goalposts. And so I've stopped bothering with those kind of people because I don't have time for it.
Exactly. Fuck them.
Yeah, and I've known those kind of people because I went to school with those kind of people. But it's like now I'm like, yeah, I knew you were like this, but you can't see past it long enough to see somebody who you considered on your end, you considered me a friend, you can't see long enough to see my humanity. You're tying political party into it. That's not it. From a political standpoint, black people would be Republicans if Republicans didn't actively go and recruit white Democrats, white Southern Democrats that were upset at the fact that they passed the civil rights movement.
Oh, absolutely. Like, I've got family that go on Facebook right now, and one minute it's fuck Trump, and the next minute it's we need prayer back in schools. It's like, y'all don't even realize y'all would be Republicans outside of the fact that Republicans hate y'all fucking guts.
Exactly.
Because here's the thing, like, there's like, okay, and that's why I said it's not, the two sides aren't left and right. There's nothing inherently wrong with being a Republican at their core, like conservative, like fiscally or whatever, but when you take the history, the long history of Republicans and who they are, and I don't mean by the name, I mean those conservative values, you know, going from Democrats right. to Dictators.
Yeah, let's remove political parties from it. We're talking about
right.
So, ideology.
So conservatives.
Ideology. So when you take the core of their beliefs set in with the fiscal conservativeness and what that represents to our nation, how, you know, they basically control everything economically, then yeah, it does become race. And that's the thing. Racism isn't just, I see a black person and I dislike you. No, racism is a class system based upon race that is meant to make sure no one excels above the white man.
Racism is seeing my name, my legal name, which I won't say it on here. Racism is seeing my legal name and thinking, even when I show up to the interview, that I'm a good Negro. Racism is hearing my concerns about what would happen if I were shot by the police and thinking, oh, you're not like that. Racism is, it's not giving people the same opportunity. And I've gotten to the point where some people have called me extreme on this. Like Ryan, I grew up, I went to a black school district for most of my life. The first part of my life, I grew up on military bases. I like anime, I like cartoons, I like comic books, I like rock music. I was always the quote unquote white kid. I had a period in my life where I had a lot of white friends, and I know for a fact that that's what these people think. They think that because they have that token black friend, that doesn't make them racist. I've started calling people on the shit. I'm almost to the point now where it's like every white person I come across, you have to prove to me that you're not a racist before I even allow you in my life. It ain't got nothing to do with hate. It's just I'm being so pro-black right now. I don't have room to allow any white people into my world. And this doesn't mean that you sit and you talk with slang or you want to emulate a black woman's vernacular and slang and their mannerisms when you walk by. No, because that to me is racist as fuck too. There's this chick in my office that I have to refrain from cussing out every day when she does that shit, talking to her little black homegirl that sits near me. It's to the point that
don't go from talking to Bob and be like, yeah, Bob, how'd you enjoy the game?
And they go, and hey girl, yeah,
like, yo.
Nah, don't do that bullshit. Because the fact of the matter is, and I had to tell the last white person that sat next to me at one of my jobs this, when he said I don't see color, I said, I ain't asking you not to see color. I'm asking you not to judge me by the shit. You telling me you don't see color is full of shit. The first thing you see when you see me is that I'm a black man. You don't see that I'm left-handed. You don't know what any of my fucking interests are. You don't know shit about me except for that I'm black when you first lay eyes on me. That shit is
low. And there's nothing wrong with that. And that's the thing. White people have gotten to the point where they're scared to talk about race because they think just the mere mention of race is racism, and they don't really care to learn what it actually is. Because that, and I'm like you, AJ, like we said before, I grew up in a majority. I mean, I grew up around white people. I grew up, like when I was coming up, my parents had moved to the suburbs, and we lived out in the suburbs. Like I said, we lived in Gwinnett County in Atlanta when Gwinnett County was mostly white. I went to Shiloh when Shiloh was a white school. My brother and I were number 25 and 26 respectively at Shiloh Elementary School when it came to the black population. When I got to Carville High School, the black population there was, I think in my class, there was 10%, and I had a class of 515 students. So that's the kind of stuff that I was always around. And they felt like if I acknowledge that you're black, I'm somehow being racist. And that's not racist. You see color. Don't feed me that bullshit, and don't feed yourself that bullshit, because you're trying to convince yourself of something that honestly is not a problem. So when you have kind of that if you go back, it's kind of like that whole hush hush thing. When I think I saw a quote before, somebody was saying that people screwed around like crazy in the 50s, but it was hush hush, you didn't talk about it, and that caused a lot of issues from the inside. When you look at the same, when you look at the thing from the racial perspective, people are hush hush about the discussion of race because A, it makes them uncomfortable, completely uncomfortable, because they have to confront some of those norms that they've dealt with for a long time, and they have to challenge some of the ideas that they've always been taught. And B, they don't know how to maneuver from that. What's the next step? I don't know. I don't know how to acknowledge. I mean, they don't know how to acknowledge that. So when you combine those two things together, you get people that are unwilling to talk about the issue at hand, and therefore it goes nowhere.
Can I go into story time really quick?
Go ahead.
I'll keep it as short as possible. Okay. One time, I'm not going to say where I stay, but I stay in a college town, and one night I was out at a bar with grad students and professors, and I was just playing darts, you know, and this white guy, you know, he was just talking to me, whatever. It was a cool conversation. And then the dreaded question came up. It was like, you know, you're pretty smart. I was like, yeah. And then he was like, I'm sorry, man, but I really have a question to ask you. I know it's going to make you uncomfortable. He was like, I just don't get the Trayvon thing. Can you explain it to me? I explained it to you. A teenager kid was killed. It's like, yeah, but, you know, he was suspended from school. I was like, but did they know that? I mean, did George Zimmerman know that before he shot him? And did that even matter? He was like, yeah, but he had weed in the system. I was like, once again, did he know that? And he really didn't get it. And I think, I'm not saying white people are inherently bad. I'm just saying they're conditioned to believe that black people, you know, are inherently bad.
If my identity wasn't so easily traceable, I might jump into a different story. But I have a similar story right after Ferguson happened. My manager, who I worked at a bank in retail. My manager at the time grew up a privileged white kid. He was cool, you know. He used to always come in and challenge my rap knowledge. Cool dude, no intent. Never said that I don't see race bullshit, but I could tell he wasn't quite all the way there. So right after Ferguson happened, we had these three gentlemen come in who were from Ferguson. They were working here in Birmingham on a contract job, came in to cash their checks. We started talking to them about it. That opened up another conversation between me and my manager. We sat there for 2 hours after the branch closed talking. And I said, man, it kills me that I could get killed and nobody would give a shit. They would try to frame me. And he said, well, come on, man, you're not like that. I said, like what? I said, you don't know what I have in my past. You don't know what they would dig up to frame me as I deserved it. And there are things in my past that would make people think I deserved it that didn't know me. And it's like that took him back and he stopped. And he was like, so man, you this dude I know who does all the things that you do. There's stuff in your past that would make people that aren't me think that you deserve to get killed. I said, yes. I said, they could find old rap songs on the internet. They could find old joking pictures that I posted. They could find Facebook statuses. They could find tweets. They could find anything to make you think that I deserve to be killed if you did not know me. And that changed his mind. And it's like ever since then, he calls me to be like, yo, man, how are you doing? I'm tired of this shit going on in the world. What's going on with you? And it's like, yeah, working with that dude changed his perspective, but everybody doesn't have that. So yeah, you're right. White people are raised to think that we are the problem. And it's like everybody doesn't have that exposure. Everybody isn't me that came from a predominantly black school but had enough exposure to white people and has a white enough name to get past in corporate America. Mm-hmm. Everybody isn't like that. I'm a rare, unique set of circumstances. My mother was raised in the projects. My mother did her best to make sure that we never lived in the projects. My dad so happened to have a name that was derived from a white man that was fresh off the boat from Ireland. And I was unfortunate enough to get that shitty ass name.
I mean, hey, look, and the three of us can kind of attest to an extent because all of us have, you know, quote unquote, white corporate sounding names. Ron, Ryan, AJ's full name. I'm not gonna say what your name actually is, but I mean, when you think of it in that context, a lot, you know, the three of us are like that. And I've talked about this a lot before because I've stated this to white friends that kind of didn't get the whole understanding of why, you know, there's still a fight for equality. And I always put it like this. Civil Rights Act was passed 1964. AJ, we've discussed this with your parents before, but both my parents were teenagers when that act passed, or at least preteens and a teenager, respectively. My mom was 10 when that act passed, and my dad was 13 years old. He remembers it clear as day. My dad grew up in the South. He grew up in Ocala. My grandmother's from Coffeyville, Mississippi. My grandmother's father was a white man who married two different black women on two separate occasions. So I and the three of us definitely come from families where that was a thing. That it's not as if we're learning about racism in a history book because or Jim Crow laws in a history book because nobody experienced it. No, our grandparents dealt with Jim Crow laws. So trying
that's
to
why,
put
that's
that
why, that's why it irritates me when people say millennials are the most tolerant generation. White millennials are their most tolerant, and it's like that's bullshit. They're not. If anything, they're worse because they don't know what racism is. Racism has been erased for them, so they don't believe that it exists. That's how you get idiots like Tomato Lorenzo.
Exactly. And so, you know, and I remember I had a good friend from high school. We talked about this once before. Shout out to DJ Wildman, because I know he listens from time to time. But we talked about just the perspective of it. For his parents, it was a whole different thing growing up because they were white and they were born in the 60s, and there was never an issue. You know, if you talk about somebody that, like my dad, was born in 51, the act passed in 64. My dad became an adult in 69 legally. So I think the only thing that kind of spared him is he went to serve and he was in Vietnam. But let's talk a little bit about somebody who talk about a Strom Thurmond. Let's talk about somebody who was an adult at the time that this thing was passed. Just because the act was passed doesn't mean that you're suddenly going to accept black people and minorities, or that you're going to be okay with the fact that they can now vote, especially when you saw them as inferior. Ron's post about the Confederate flag kind of sums it up dearly with Jefferson Davis's quote regarding the white man's place over the Negro. I mean, that isn't going to instantly change. And so we're talking about 53 years since this act was passed. We have people who are still alive that were alive and cognizant, before the act was passed, meaning they knew what was going on. They weren't just a 1 or 2 year old.
And I say this all the time. I think because of the way history has framed race relations in the civil rights movement, you have a whole generation of white people who think that Dr. Martin Luther King made his I Have a Dream speech and racism ended.
That was
and it. They think it ended until Barack Obama became president in 2008, not realizing that it's just like I think Chris Rock said it. Racism didn't increase. The shit's just getting recorded now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I love his quote about as far as like race relations, like white people don't have to step up to the plate. White people are just getting nicer. That's racism in America, right? Because here's the thing, and going back to my definition of racism, racism isn't a hot emotion or an action. Like, you don't have to lynch somebody to be racist. Like, racism is you seeing that black guy walk towards you and you know, going across the street, or you seeing that black name on the application and being like, okay, he doesn't need to stay in this neighborhood. You know, that's racism.
And you don't have to be white to do that shit. I know plenty. I worked with more than enough black people to know how many times they've seen a black name on an application and they were the last to get called simply because they had ethnic sounding name, and that was a black manager that was doing it.
I said this on Twitter. You don't have to be white to subscribe to white supremacy, you know, because we
don't have to be a man to subscribe to sexism.
Nope.
Right. And I forgot who said this. I think it was MLK. He was like, the greatest thing the white man did is to make the poor white think the poor white think he was better than, you know, the nigger. Because basically, to some black people, the best black man you could be is, you know, a carbon copy of a white man, even the lowest white man. Right. You could see a wealthy, well-doing black man.
He's
trying to laugh it up, and he's trying to laugh it up with, you know, just any old white man. You know, like to be black, you feel like you have to, you know, just erase your culture, and because it almost like it shames you to be black, and I can't stand that, because you can, your blackness shouldn't threaten anybody. Because here's the thing, like, you can ask a white person where they came from. They would say, okay, my parents came from Ireland. You know, they crossed Ellis Island. You know, they came into Ireland in the 1900s. Black people, we don't have that identity. So embracing your blackness and the culture that we created here, that shouldn't threaten anyone.
The most powerful culture in the world.
Right. So I don't know why you're ashamed of that. I know why others are threatened by that, but you as a black man, I don't know why you're ashamed by that.
I mean, and to me, it's like, it just goes to show that too often we get caught up in trying to assimilate when we don't have to. Like, people ask me all the time, why do I choose to live in predominantly black areas? And I always respond to them, you mean, why do I keep my money in predominantly black areas? Because we're the only group of people that are expected to go to predominantly white areas to succeed. And I'll tell you, know, I won't go into a whole big financial spiel this time, but we do need to talk about this one day. But black people are in a no-win situation, because what happens is you feel like, oh, I've got too much money to live in the hood, so you decide to move to a predominantly white area. You buy a house in a predominantly white area at the white price. What happens when you move there is black people find out about it. So when they start coming up, they start moving out there. You know what happens when more black people decreases move into the neighborhood? Value. Property value decreases. Mm-hmm. So if you want to know why the majority of black family wealth was lost in the 2008 recession, it's because black people lived in houses that they paid the white price for. And by the time they had moved, the property value had dropped. I grew up in an area like that, Trotwood, Ohio. Trotwood, Ohio is the only city like it in the world. When I live there, the apartments that I live in now are pretty much, the apartments that I grew up in, if you drive by now, they're pretty much projects. That happened in a span of 20 years. I moved to Trotwood, Ohio in 1997. Fall of 1996, so 21 years. And when I went, the last time I went back and drove through there, it was 2013. So in the span of, what's that, 17 years? The apartments that I grew up in became projects because black people moved out of there. Kirk Herbstreit's family is from Trotwood, Ohio. When black people moved into Trotwood, they transferred him to a richer white area called Centerville. My niece goes to school in Centerville now. Centerville used to be this untouchable white place in Ohio. My niece lives there now.
Yeah, I know about Centerville, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, look at look in Birmingham. You don't have to look any further than that. Talk about Centerpoint, or talk about what's the other ones out
hell,
there?
Hell, it's happening in Helena right now.
Yeah, it definitely happens in Helena right now, and Hoover, it's happening to Hoover, and you see little
Hoover has
things.
A whole elementary school. They send poor whites, black students and Latino students to. They have a whole elementary school
Hoover
where they send underprivileged
the bus
students.
System. Because you had so many kids, their argument was so many kids from the apartments coming from over there. They were going to cancel the buses so that those kids couldn't get bused in.
Right.
I mean,
and same with Montgomery, like, because
systematic.
You know, Montgomery. Yeah, white people in Montgomery, they basically said Autauga County now, if I pronounce that correctly. You know, these Indian names in Alabama, but yeah. Like, they've picked up and relocated to, like, Prattville and all that. So, that's the thing. It's like
black
when
people
black people inhabit these areas.
Real estate in the country, wherever we are, because wherever we move, the real estate values are low. So, wherever we are, they're going to buy that up and build it back up.
Yep.
And that is why our school systems are shit, because we don't own that property. And school systems are funded by property tax. When I tell people that working in the financial institution has really shaped my views on what systematic racism really is, it would amaze you the rules that they play by that we don't even understand yet. We're on the court playing basketball and we don't know that we can't travel. We don't know that we can't double dribble. We don't know what a three-point shot is. We don't know that we have to cross half court by 8 seconds. We don't know that there can only be five people on the court at once. And every time we break one of these rules, we argue with the refs and they go down and score another basket. That is basically what being black in America is like. We're playing a fucking game where we don't know the rules.
Because here's the thing, and I think, I don't know, like, I want to give them the benefit of the doubt. I don't know if it's by design or they just don't understand, but the generational wealth, because, okay, my grandmother's father died when he was 100. He died in 1996, if I'm not mistaken. He was a sharecropper. Go before that, his granddad was a sharecropper. Go before that, I'm not his granddad, his dad was a sharecropper. Go before that, you know what his dad was?
A slave.
Yes, a slave. Not that far removed. I have firsthand accounts of slavery. And I don't think you understand that. Like, while your family took that money that they made, you know, off cotton gins, off, you know, tobacco, off
land this grants. And that.
Right. My family had to take the only skills they knew at the time, which was agriculture, you know, tending to land. And we basically had to pay those crops back just to live on the land. We made no money off of it. Then a little bit more, we progressed just a little bit more, just a little bit more. So that's why I tell people, I'm not the most successful person in the world, but if you knew what I came from, a success story. Like, my mom tells me all the time now, like, I'm proud of you because you could have went the other way.
No, that's real life. So like, that's my family, right? Too. My mom grew up in the projects. My mother grew up. I am one generation removed from roaches, Section 8, food, all that shit. Projects. That's where my mother grew up. I have an uncle in jail for murder. Just to show you where my life could have went. If not for the fact that my grandfather's family took my mother in and shaped her reality, my mother could have easily gone down that same path. Her little brother didn't have that opportunity because they had different parents. He sold drugs. He's in jail for murder. The roughest projects for a long time in Dayton, Ohio, the Dayton metropolitan area, my family's from that. It's if you sit and look, I think I just looked it up. The average black family needs 228 years to close the wealth gap from black to white people. If you go from the inception of this country, 1776, to the Civil Rights Act, you're talking about 200 some odd years. The shit is not a coincidence. We say white people have had a head start. You literally had a 200 year head start. And that's not including the years of slavery before that.
Right, and that's kind of, and I think that's the point I was trying to bring up earlier too, is that no matter who you are as a black person, you don't have, even if you somehow, your family somehow came into a sum of wealth before, you know, the Civil Rights Act passed, whether you were one of the holdovers from Greenwich, Tulsa, you know, some of the ones that were actually able to get away and survive and keep their funding, keep their money. Very few of us have generational wealth. And so, like I said, my family's trajectory would have been way different if my grandparents, let me put it this way, not even just my grandparents, three of my grandparents went and served in the service. But aside from that, if my parents probably hadn't went into working in the Postal Service, you know, my dad didn't, my parents didn't have a safety net. You know what I'm saying? Like, and we all can vouch for that. None of our parents had a safety net. Even if we came up with the experience that, you know, like I always say that I was truly blessed because if anything went wrong in my life, I had the safety net of my parents. But they created that. Just like as my daughter grows up, I'm creating a safety net so that if anything goes wrong, she can fall back to us. But that shouldn't be an exception. And for us as black people, that is an exception. And we kind of make fun of that to an extent. We make fun of people who have that ability to do that. And it's because it's not normal for us. It's not normal to be able to fall back on something, to be able to fall back to your parents and they'll be okay. A lot of times it's the other way around. A lot of times the parents put you through school in hopes that you'll become the safety net.
And then you got a whole family of people you got to pull up. Let me loop
this back around with my political beliefs. You know, I guess, like we said a while ago, black people, without knowing it, can be very Republican. And I come from a pretty, you know, Baptist conservative background, even though they vote Democrat. But anyway,
my Rango County, baby.
I've used a line with Democrats simply because people need an opportunity. What they do with that opportunity is their choice, but they need the opportunity. When I was in first grade, my parents got divorced, and just so happens a year later, my mom lost her job. We were on food stamps. And you know how they say the most important meal of the day is breakfast. And I was on, you know, free breakfast and free lunch. And if I didn't have that, like, who knows, like, because I already wasn't performing well at school because of my, you know, because of my situation. But who knows where I would have been if, you know, if I was starving at school. Like, I wouldn't have, like, if, like, no kid should have to go through that. No kid should have to think about their next meal while they're in school with their, like, stomach rumbling or whatever. So that's what I'm saying. Like, people just need the opportunity. And but what they do with that opportunity is their choice. Like, and that's not a crutch. It's equity. You know, you just have to give somebody a step stool to see if, you know, they can step up to society. Like, I'm all for that. And when you start to pull these things away, like this government is doing, and it's funny that his voters in Alabama, you know, a lot of, you know, majority of whites are on, you know, welfare and food stamps and SNAP benefits. They're about to have that taken away. And you have to ask yourself, when these programs are taken away, the programs that benefit the people, you have to ask yourself, what's the function of the government? Why are we even paying taxes? Me, Alabama, I qualify as a middle class person. Damn sure don't feel like it, but I do. So why am I paying taxes if that money is going to a president who's taking everything away from the people?
Because the majority of those taxes go towards corporate subsidies.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, you have to ask these questions. Like, we have to ask, like, what is this government, this administration doing, and what is it doing for us, the people? And right now, we see that it's not for the people.
And it's never been for the people. It's just the fact that now they don't even give a fuck about hiding it.
The thing that kills me too, and it's kind of going back to an example of what you stated, Ron. What's funny is a lot of people who are Republican don't realize that they actually make use of a lot of Democratic ideals. And just to give you another example, I mean, both of y'all know I work in higher education. I work with students as they're transitioning into college. And so I deal a lot of times with those initial financial aid and FAFSA questions. And after this election, I had a lot of parents who were upset because there was discussion that Pell Grant funding was going to get cut. And a lot of the people that were making use of it were white, rural Alabamians. And they were upset that finding out that instead of getting that 5863 or whatever it is per year, that it might become less than that. And they're asking, how am I going to afford, you know, paying for my child to go to school? How are they going to get a leg up? How are they going to be able to come out of what they're doing? And, you know, maybe they don't want to just go do, you know, manual or trade labor and go get a trade, which is, there's nothing wrong with a trade, but maybe they've got their eyes set on engineering and you're
let's like segue from there, because this is something that Ronnie talked to me about and something that I'm focused on right now. We really, if we as black people want to come up, we really got to start focusing more on the trades. That is the foundation of every economic movement is trades. Everybody can't afford professional white collar services. If we gonna come up, it's gotta start with blue collar services, because those are the services that people need first, and those are the services that are gonna make the most money. Because if we really want to talk about black economic empowerment, it's gonna start with your plumbers, your electrician, your roofers, your landscapers, your barbers, the people who are really working with their hands. And those things don't cost a lot, because as a college student, and Ryan works in colleges, Ryan works in higher education, it is becoming impossible. The only reason I can afford to go to school is because my company pays for me to go to school. Not a lot, but I can afford about a semester of school because of my tuition reimbursement.
And we're hitting a bubble soon, but that's a whole other discussion. But
we're hitting
a higher education bubble. It's coming.
And you better have a fucking skill in place when that shit happens. Because like me, I work for a financial institution. I dread the day that fucking bubble bursts. Because my ass is probably going to be out of a job.
And that's the whole reason why, because I always tell students that I work with, diversify your portfolio. If you're going to be an engineer, don't just be an engineer.
Learn how to do everything.
Everything that you can.
The first thing I learned being a musician is that me just knowing how to rap wasn't going to cut it. I need to learn to play an instrument. I need to learn how to mix and master. I need to learn how to run a sound. I should have learned how to run lights. There are so many different things that you need to learn how to do if you are going to work in an area. Because the more you know how to do, the more job security you have, i.e. the more ways that you can go out and make money. Every successful musician knows how to do different things musically.
I'm a prime example because y'all know where I work. But when I tell people what I actually do, they're like, wait, you could do that there? And I'm like, yeah, because I went in high school and I was lucky as hell to have a black teacher who cared about me. He was my computer science teacher. You know, I still see him from time to time. We talk today. And he took me to these computer Olympiads and he taught me, you know, basic coding and all that. And that stuck through me and that stuck with me. So that starts early. Like you have to learn a skill early. And some high schools offer that. Like some high schools teach people how to weld, cart, things like that. And there's no shame in taking. I think there's a stigma attached to that, especially in the black community. Like when you see, cause I know when our kids went to the trade school, they were assumed to be, you know, oh, these people are going to drop out. Whatever. No, there's no shame in that.
We roasted the hell out of the kids that went to trade schools. And those kids got the best jobs of damn near anybody that I went to high school with.
Right. Like my stepbrother was my former stepbrother because my dad's a hobe anyway. Like he's a welder and he makes pretty damn good money. And, you know, he didn't go to college. He's a welder.
When I worked in the branch for banks, the people that used to make the most money were the HVAC technicians, the electricians, the plumbers, the people who worked with their hands. Those people used to come in cashing big checks, big old checks. They used to come in cashing a check for 2 weeks worth of work. That was 3 months of my whole salary. Mm-hmm. And they came into work hands all dirty and shit. I'm sitting up there in a suit like, goddamn. I'm making $150 your check.
Yeah, after the Tuscaloosa tornado, I actually worked for FEMA that summer. I worked in Coleman County, which is funny as hell. That's a story for another day. But anyway, my immediate boss, let me tell you this. I was making $28 an hour. Just imagine how much my boss is making. And we were working 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, and getting overtime, double overtime. Just imagine how much my boss was making in that time. Like, you don't even want to know.
I mean, you know, the other thing, too. other tip, too.
Ronnie doesn't have a phantom, by the way, people. That was a joke. I don't want people thinking he's richer than he is.
I mean, that kind of lends to something else I was going to say, which is if you can't work for the government, because they'll pay you a lot. Just like I kind of said, both my parents were postal workers, and I didn't find this out till like 5 years ago. But my dad did not have a college degree until 2003.
Yeah, my dad got his college degree in like 2007. He retired from the military. He gets a military retirement check, and he's a teacher. So imagine what the hell his retirement is going to look like. He retired at 39 years old from the military.
And the Postal Service will pay you, I think, if you're in there long enough, when you retire, you'll get like 75% of your check.
Yeah.
So, you know.
I keep telling people all the time, whenever we finally like get out here and we really like y'all really see us start doing work in this community, I'm going to have these kids on this financial tip. It's so much game I got on the financial shit that I ain't just handing out just for whatever, but it's so much shit, man. Like, we really have the power to affect change in our environment in a very real way. We just need the tools to do so, and I'm confident that once we get out here and start doing that shit, these kids are going to, like, really take that shit and run with it.
the pieces are coming together slowly, and I think as we get further and further, and I'm not trying to be the "oh, we'll give it time" guy, because it's going to be more than just getting further and further away from Jim Crow era and everything of that nature. But as we have time to build wealth and we actually start investing in ourselves and we actually start taking what's going on and saying, like, you guys have seen me say it a couple times, but I honestly feel this way. I'm no longer going to invest my time in trying to make white people understand why my life is valued. I'm done. That's on other white people to figure out. My focus right now is to take care of my family and do what I can to get back to my community.
And I'll take it one step further. It ain't even on white people to value my life. If you think my life ain't valuable, try me.
No, that's what I'm saying. I really don't care.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm on that shit.
Respect.
And here's the thing. There's a difference between, like, somebody coming to me, up to me, like the story I gave, and be like, "Okay, Ron, I want to understand. Can you break that down to me?" Like, there's a difference between that and me arguing with some racist troll trying to nail it into his head about why my life matters.
Yeah, that, I mean, we just,
I'm not doing it anymore.
We've had a comment on the live chat that I deleted because I'm like, I'm not dealing with it. Like, why? Like, why?
What was the comment? Out of curiosity.
Something like, "Oh, white people, all the white people's is going to kill us." Then I just blocked them and banned them. Like, why am I going to bother?
Right. Yeah, there's no space for that because it, like AJ said, it's to the point now where if you don't see it, you're going out your way not to see it.
Exactly. And fuck them. We've gone like 47 minutes on like depressing shit. So to be funny.
We have. So let's strike it up.
So we got to get some bullshit in before we go. Ronnie is the president of I'm just playing. I won't even go there. I'm not even going
to. Okay, man.
has any funny shit like happened this week? Like, I know we've been all focused on the bullshit. I haven't paid attention because listeners, I've been like severely depressed for like the last 3 weeks. So I haven't paid attention to like anything funny. This is probably like the first day in a long time where I felt like good enough to like come on and laugh and shit. Has anything funny happened? Like, has anything noteworthy funny happened?
Cardi B got bought a Bentley, so you know, good for her.
Right.
Yeah, and as you know,
we're upset about that.
Yeah, which is stupid. But anyway, as you know, the Carmichael show ended, and I just want to highlight that I think it was either the last episode or second to last episode. It's about threesomes, and it's freaking hilarious. So if you haven't watched the Carmichael show, get into that. And it's about his girlfriend giving him a threesome on their third year anniversary of their relationship. It's hilarious. So just, you know, to add a little levity in the situation and break up, you know, all the sad, depressing shit, you know, like, and that's the thing, find something to laugh about, man, like, because you can't have this constant stream of just, like, when Trump was making that speech, I closed my browser, and I just put on, like, some fucking Earth, Wind, and Fire, man, like, you gotta find something to, like, you can't be plugged in 24/7, like, No, he was in Cameo, but he was in Cameo. But anyway,
hold on. This is a joke, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh no, okay. No, but seriously, when I was young, I really thought my dad was in Cameo.
No, Ronnie's dad was like a gospel singer.
But yeah,
was a rapper. Like, he had an underground rap career. Like, Ronnie's dad had an underground gospel career, apparently.
Like, there's a barbershop you could go to in Demopolis, and you could go in there and buy one of my dad's CDs.
Oh, wow.
Like, my dad is the most niggerish nigger of all. But when I tell you this nigga can sing, and when you hear him sing, you'll probably fucking cry because he can fucking sing.
And my dad, like my dad really has bars. Like, I'm confident my dad will give like any non-rapper dad bars. Like, I'm confident.
I mean, that's a pretty low bar to
say. I mean, but, that's a
That's I mean,
all I can think of is my dad trying to rap, and my dad trying to rap be the worst thing ever.
Like my dad really has bars. Like the first time I heard this nigga rap, I was like 10. I was like, what the, like this nigga really was flowing, like over a Bad Boy instrumental. Like, and that nigga was just, he one of them old nigga rappers too. He was like, check me out now before he start rapping. I'm like, bro, this ain't that.
Yeah.
No more, you don't have to do all that.
Can you talk about how randomly rap has evolved over the years? How, like, if you go back and listen to something from like the 70s, and you hear these niggas like, I go with the everybody was yelling, like everybody in the 80s.
Yeah, I was supposed to, I shouldn't even have to state this, but that's why a lot of people in our generation don't know the significance of Illmatic. Illmatic was a pivot point in hip hop. If you listen to what was happening before Illmatic, when Nas came on the scene, and to hear somebody rapping like that, Rakim and Big Daddy Kane, and you know, they kind of started it, but to hear Nas come, Nas is really the godfather of New York rap when you think about his style and what comes to mind when you think New York rap now. Like, nobody was doing that before Nas. So
go listen to Illmatic and listen to Reasonable Doubt, and you will see where a lot of Jay-Z's influence came from.
Right.
Like, when Nas said, like, he was biting the style in Ether, like, I never understood that shit till I went back and started listening to some of that 90s stuff, and it's like, there's a clear transition in 94 when Nas dropped
Silk. Nas really started the mafioso rap, too. Like, he, with,
yeah, absolutely.
It was written, yeah.
He's the reason why you have multiple producers on hip-hop albums now, because before, there was a rapper worked with a producer. That's how you had, you know, so many rapper producer duos in the late 80s, early 90s, because that was the thing. You had a rapper and you had a producer. So because Large Professor could, you know, he had a conflict where he couldn't produce Illmatic, Nas had to go get all these different producers. And that's where niggas got the idea from that, oh shit, I don't need this one producer. I can go get this producer, yeah, a beat from here, a beat from here, a beat from here, and then put it together and call it out. And that's like modern day.
Let me give the listeners some homework. Like, read Born to Use Mics. It's about Illmatic and the background of it. And when it talks about everything from the album cover to the samples to the references of the Wild Style movie at the beginning, before New York State of Mind. It's a really introspective book. So if you know, really care about the history of hip hop, read Born to Use Mics.
And I would hope anyone who's listening to this podcast would care about the history of it. Like, don't get me wrong. I fucks with ignorant rap. I love that hip hop has evolved so far. We still need subgenres. But that's a conversation for another day.
I mean,
but I love the fact that hip hop has come so far, but if you don't know where you came from, it's harder to figure out where you're going. So anyone that's listening to this, you should be fucking with the history of hip-hop. You should know about the shit. I'm not saying go back all the way to goddamn 79. I'm not saying you got to go listen to Kool Herc, but you should know about the
history. I'm not even saying you have to like it.
But understand where this shit came from. Like, there's a John Mayer song I love called Bold as Love. That's a Jimi Hendrix record. If you listen to the record, John Mayer sounds better. But he made it 30 years after Jimi Hendrix, so it should sound better. Rappers today should sound better than rappers from the 80s, because they've had 30 years of technique improvement. Those dudes were not rapping having listened to Jay-Z and Lil Wayne and all the people that had developed the styles off of the people before them. So there's zero reason why a rapper today should not have better mechanics and better technique than a motherfucker rapping in 1984.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really. Yeah, there's not really a discussion about that, because, I mean, yeah, there's not an excuse why you couldn't. Yeah.
If you're rapping like you're rapping like somebody in '83, you have a problem. If someone was dribbling like Bob Cousy today in the NBA, there would be a fucking problem.
I would dunk on them. That's what would happen.
I could cross up Bob Cousy today, and I have like a tenth of athleticism.
I mean, think about that, like, dude, like, I would fuck it up if I went to the '60s. Like, I,
like, dude, you put me in the '60s, my nigga, I'm the greatest basketball player ever.
Like, and my crossover ain't even that nice, but I would just dribble with my left hand and I would just fuck everybody up.
Like, nigga, I just go between the legs a couple times, nigga, to fade back and take a jump shot and just be shitting on niggas. Like, nigga, if you put me in 1996, I'd be the illest rapper ever with what I know today.
Right. I mean, think about how some of the styles would play over too. Like, if you came with like Amigos type flow in the 90s, in the late 90s, especially if you put that shit with like, I don't know, some the Crunk era, you put that flow with the Crunk era. Like, think about how revolutionary.
Or even put it with like Pete Rock production, or put it with J Dilla production. Put it with early Just Blaze production. And this is what people don't like. A lot of quote unquote real hip hop heads don't understand. The biggest thing that I take from trap rap is their cadences and where they put the stresses on their words. That shit is amazing to me, to study that shit. I didn't appreciate
exactly,
that shit.
Like,
I really sat back and listened to it and was like, oh fuck, these motherfuckers are really doing something.
Like, AJ, I was telling you, like Migos are the most technically proficient rappers in the game, like when you think about it. And
absolutely.
And fucking Pee Wee Longway and Uzi can do it too. Uzi flow is crazy, like when you listen to it. And that's a thing. I think if they had just a little bit more like knowledge of like the craft,
if these niggas grew up with Squad Lil Wayne, because I said this earlier on the timeline, Lil Wayne's peak popularity wise and his peak skill wise are about 3 or 4 years apart. If they grew up with, if Lil Wayne had his popularity when he had his peak skill wise, the game would be completely different today. Because these young ass charismatic rappers would actually be doing some ill shit lyrically, and the game would be at a whole other echelon. The problem is that Wayne's peak in popularity came when he got lazy.
And it's crazy how that works. It's crazy.
It's amazing how that works. Happens.
Yeah, that really only happens in rap. Like, there's like a huge, like, when like, it's almost like the high school environment. Like, the coolest kid in class is the guy who doesn't do the work.
Exactly. Because I tell people all the time, if you want to hear Wayne at his peak, go listen to Squad Up 4. Lil Wayne was doing some amazing ass shit. The original Young Money mixtape with him, Mac Main, Boo, and Currency, amazing. The Prefix and Suffix mixtapes, crazy.
Oh man, Prefix and Suffix, diamonds on my neck. Oh my God.
Crazy. That's Wayne at his peak. That's Wayne rapping like nobody else on this planet could rap. He was rapping so good, niggas thought Gilly was ghostwriting for him. Because he went and he studied. There's a line on the original Young Money mixtape where he says, got Hov at the game and now he coaching me. He was that good. Jay-Z was critiquing him on his game. Like, peak
like,
Wayne.
Like, the funniest story about that is when he said Jay-Z called him up and he was like, I see you, and he just hung up. Like, he's just like, yeah. He's just like, yeah, I see you, and then he hung up.
How ill do you have to be for Jay-Z? Not Magna Carta Jay-Z, but Hov. Like, Hov it is to call you and say, I see you. I see you. And casual Wayne fans, like people who only know No Ceilings, y'all ain't gonna know what the fuck we talking about. But I promise you, go on DatPiff right now and type in Squad Up 4. And you will hear some of the illest rapping from Wayne that you have ever heard. And when you go back and you listen to anything post 2006, you'll understand what I say. Lil Wayne is the Randy Moss of rap. Probably had the highest ceiling ever, but his effort killed it.
When he started doing the 1-2-3 punchline rap,
the Kit Kat set up punchline.
Oh man, I hated that.
I hated that so much.
I go like, planners, I go macadamia.
Did you hear what he said? Yes, nigga, I heard what he said.
Multiple orgasms. That's my MO. Come on,
like
dog.
when folks were liking the Real G's Moving Silence, like Lasagna line, unironically, that's how I knew that we had gone too far.
I'ma tell you when I knew. July 2006, I just moved to Birmingham. Dedication 2 was out. I was listening to it. I called my brother, who's a huge Lil Wayne fan. And I said, bro, Wayne falling off. He said, nigga, what? Nigga, Dedication 2 fire. I said he's getting lazy. Carter 3 dropped. 2008, 2009, somewhere in there. Carter 3 dropped. My brother called me and he said, I hear what you're saying now.
And you know what frustrates me about Carter 3? Two of my favorite Lil Wayne songs of all time on the Let the Beat Build and Dr. Carter. If you listen to Dr. Carter, I'm like, why can't you give me this all the time?
Every time. It's my same frustration with Lupe when I hear Mural and then I hear fucking Droga's Light. And the difference is it's not that Lupe got so famous that he didn't have to try anymore. It's that Lupe was so fucked up by what the industry had done to him that he stopped caring.
Right.
And it's crazy how you can be the most talented person on the planet, and because of what the game does to you, you stop. And then you can have the most talented in the world, and because everyone starts acknowledging you, you stop working for it. Like it's utterly amazing, those two guys, what their ceilings were. Because Lupe will tell you that Wayne is one of the best rappers he's ever heard, which is a compliment coming from, in my opinion, one of the greatest lyricists ever. But their paths diverged at a different point. Lupe's wasn't popularity, it was industry bullshit. Wayne's was popularity.
And I think Hov like wrapped up the paradox, and I'm gonna make this quick. He wrapped up the paradox like perfectly. He said, do you wanna be overpaid or underrated? So I think what people are attracted to, what the masses are attracted to, that makes it that pop culture music is something just lighthearted and, you know, not much thought into it. You could go that route, or you could be extremely good and respected at your craft, but not be as popular. Which one do you want?
You can be really good, half-assing it, and make $1 billion.
But we're never gonna have another Hov. Like, there's never gonna be somebody with the intersection of being both a good rapper and, you know,
a good rapper without trying. A good rapper without trying.
Right.
Because I still want to know when's the last time Hov went close to 90% post Reasonable Doubt. I'm convinced we ain't seen
American Gangster.
I think that was 80.
And he only went like all in on like 4 tracks, even though the rest of them he was still trying more than usual. But
because that was when peak
he was
Wayne
still
was
like
peak popularity went,
right?
I should say.
There was something I wanted to talk about, but I can't find the list now. It was like the top 20 Chicago rappers of all time, because I just wanted to slap whoever made the list.
Yeah, Lupe was way too low.
Lupe was 6.
He was 6. I
he
think
was behind Chance.
I think he's over Chance. I think he's over Keith. I won't say that Keith shouldn't be over Chance, because his impact, he did birth a lot of these new rappers.
Yeah, I was gonna say, even though I personally don't like Chief Keef, like, you have to have him top 5 as Chicago rappers. And
like my
I'd
top
say
now go ahead.
I say Lupe, Common, Yay. I say Lupe, Common, Yay. Okay, who else? Chief Keef.
Twista.
And yeah, I was gonna say I have no problem putting Twista on there. Now outside of that is immediately I have somebody like King Louie. Like, he's not very popular outside of like Chicago, but when you want to talk like, because I'm really surprised he didn't blow up, because King Louie was actually dope. But anyway, so I put him like right outside of that. But to have Lupe at 6, like, come on now.
Unbiased, I'm going, if you're talking about like the overall package, I'm going Kanye, Common, Twista, Lupe, Keith is my 5. Chance 6. And, you know, from there, you know, you can kind of argue about whoever. But top 5.
Off the Brat, and I'm fed up.
The Brat is there, but I think maybe it's because when you think of Chicago, you don't think of the Brat. She's a lot more synonymous with So-So Def ATL than she is with Chicago.
Yeah, I think that's more so. If the Brat was on there, then you could technically put Luda on there too, if the Brat's on there. Shit.
Yeah, because, I mean, Luda was born in Chicago too.
But didn't Luda move when he was still like in high school?
Yeah, he moved like much younger, but still like the Brat still like was like 18, 19.
Yeah, she's from Chicago, and it's not that she never rep Chicago. It's just that when you think of her, you don't think Chicago immediately. But she's top 10 either way. She's top 10 either way.
Right.
I mean, you know, like I said, I don't, if you want to put her top 5 because of what she's done, I don't mind that. You know, it's just
I wouldn't go five with her. I just kind of felt like she was getting shafted because she wasn't mentioned on the outside.
And quiet as cat, man. Detroit is close when you start talking about Midwest cities.
Now that's an interesting conversation, like, because Detroit.
Royce and Sean. I mean, when you start talking about Detroit, man, Detroit don't get a lot of love as far as the Midwest goes. And me being a Midwesterner, they don't get a ton of love when you start talking about, like, Chicago is obviously and clearly the number one Midwest city, but Detroit ain't that far behind. The gap ain't as big as people like to think it is.
You know, we probably need to do an episode regarding who were to put the best of each region against each other. I don't know. I'm throwing ideas out, y'all.
Hey, fuck it. We can do top five of whatever region. East Coast, South.
Yeah, almost like a NCAA tournament, how they have.
Honestly, we need to get the brackets rolling.
East Coast.
I mean, you know, the South's still going to hold it down, though. So, you know.
Here's my issue with the South. You might need the Southeast and Southwest.
Texas has to have its own.
Exactly. Because Texas is a little bit different.
I'd venture to say Texas is its own and Atlanta is its own.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Southeast and Southwest. Because Atlanta clearly influenced everything east of Texas. And then Texas is kind of its own kind of thing. And just to make it even, we could even throw Toronto in there because it's kind of its own thing too. We could throw overseas rappers in there.
Okay, I was going to say, how many Toronto?
We could throw overseas rappers in there to account for Toronto.
Like, we're going
to
have Drake and Tory Lanez and Chaos and Cardinal Official.
Slick Rick. Cardinal Official. Jen. I mean, you can make a case for some overseas rappers. Like, you can get a good five in there. And do about six.
Yeah, well, and that's the top five. I was going to say, I'd throw like Dizzy Rascal in there as well.
Yeah, I mean you can get a case for five for non-American rappers, five from the Midwest, five from the West Coast, five from the East Coast, five from Texas / the Southwest, five from the Southeast.
I mean I think we can do it by city / I mean, like, I think it could be you could do a Chicago, and you could do a Detroit, you could do an Atlanta, you could do a Memphis, you could do a Houston, you could do a New York.
I don't know, because that might take a while.
Let's do the best. Yeah, the best rap city we could do. We have LA, we have Houston, we have Atlanta, we have Detroit, we have Chicago, New York.
Memphis.
Let's just do. Yeah, got Memphis.
I mean, okay, but then, who has the best? But see, when rap. You start talking about East Coast, man, you start talking about Philly. You got Jersey in there. You know, you got.
Yeah, but okay,
you got
I don't,
New York City. I mean, because Jersey, I could throw off Button, Redman, Tretch, Queen Latifah. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, Jersey
yeah, I'm,
by,
I'm,
Jersey
I'm
by itself.
It like that.
Jersey
I
by itself.
It like that. I'm fine with doing it like that. Let's do it like that.
All right. So what we going to do? Like top seven American cities and then overseas?
Yeah, I say let's put together the lists. And then we can let
all right, so off the top of my head, America, I'm thinking L.A.,
Let me open up the Microsoft Word. Hold on. Okay. Hold on now.
Let's see if we can get the seven. Cause like I said,
it could probably be more than seven. Let's just get cities named.
We might be able to combine Philly and Jersey if it's necessary.
Okay, so we got Atlanta,
Houston,
Memphis, Houston,
LA,
Bay Chicago. Area, Chicago.
We can just do Cali on its own. Just do Cali on
something.
All right. Yeah, because we got to add Mahershala Ali on there, you know, as Prince Ali.
Chicago and Detroit.
Philly.
Philly. Jersey. New York. How many cities is that?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's 10.
Damn, that's 10 cities. All right.
We need Miami.
Okay, yeah, we'll do Miami and then overseas, and that's 12. That's an even number.
And can we get it to a 16 without stretching it too far?
If you split up Cali, that'll give us 13.
So let's do LA, and then we'll
LA
just say
the Bay.
Northern Cali.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, we'll say the Bay. Yeah, no Cal. Okay, yeah.
So that's 13.
We said Chicago, we did Detroit.
If you want to be,
you have five Alabama artists.
We could just do a general Midwest. No,
I was about to say let's leave that at 12, but let's have like a top four seeds, you know.
But no.
And almost like a play-in game.
If we do a general Midwest, because you know Ohio has a few artists, and you could throw in St. Louis.
Yeah, you could do a St.
Okay,
yeah,
okay,
yeah,
okay.
St. Louis.
You could do a general Midwest that puts us up at 14.
You could do a general South.
Nobody from South Louis should be on the list.
Because when you start talking about it, like just the general South, you got J. Cole, Fonte, you know what I'm saying? That's its own general Southern thing. So that puts us up at 15, and we would just need one more.
The rest of Florida.
Overseas.
I mean, T-Bank from Tallahassee.
Overseas.
We got that already.
Oh, we had overseas?
Yeah. Is there anybody else from like that's not from Miami who's from Florida that relatively big except for T-Pain?
Well, I figured that would just be a catch-all Southern thing.
Okay. Yeah, you're right.
Fuck it. We can come up with one.
We can put it out there. Somebody will think of another region we're not thinking of.
Yeah. And
Topeka, Kansas.
Man, get the fuck out of here.
Nigga, we're not gonna have a reason just to have a Mortal Technique or Tech Nine, I'm sorry.
I know one good rapper from the Plain State, and that's Trev Rich from Denver, Colorado. That's it.
I have no clue who the hell that is, but I'll check him out just because you said it.
He's alright. He's cool. He's okay. I mean, listen. I'm not finna go tell you that the nigga is the savior, but you know, that he got some decent bars.
Okay.
He signed for Cash Money, so you'll probably never hear from him again.
Oh yeah, that's okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah, and that bracket was gonna include your boy Bow Wow, AJ.
Man, get the fuck out of here. Bow Wow's from Atlanta, nigga. Ohio disavowed all knowledge.
Nah, man, he didn't have a song about
being from Ohio. Bow Wow is a nomad. Like, nobody wants him. Like,
Bow Wow has not lived in Ohio.
Like, Atlanta doesn't want him.
5 years old. Like, that nigga is not from Ohio.
New Orleans, dog. How we forget about New Orleans?
Yeah. Okay, yeah. New Orleans.
That's 16.
New Orleans is the
16th. I don't know how we forgot about that.
Yeah, New Orleans is the 16th.
Yeah, I feel bad for forgetting about New Orleans now. For shit.
We might not be allowed there.
Yeah, I'm sorry, New Orleans. Like, I can't believe I forgot about you.
Yeah, that was a huge oversight on our part. I'm blaming it on the whiskey.
Gotta be.
I'm
drinking Jim Beam vanilla straight. I don't know what the fuck I'm thinking, but it's not that bad.
Should Virginia get its own? Let's just do an other. Instead of that South one, let's just make it an other.
Yeah, other.
Because you got some people left in the ether, like Virginia. I'm not going to call Missy Elliott a Southern rapper.
Because, I mean, yeah, you talking about Pusha T, Malice.
Yeah. Now, Virginia might just need to be.
I mean, nah, we just General South. General South.
All right. We'll just keep it an other, because I don't want to say South, because folks going to get offended. Because I'm offended. Even though I know Virginia is technically South, I get offended when y'all start referring to Virginia as South.
He's the South, but ain't.
Yeah, and it's like I get it, but like, you know,
because I mean, yeah, you start talking about because Wale from the DMV area. So I mean, yeah, you got enough there to warrant a top five from that other region. I mean, J. Cole, Fonte,
okay, who from
Wale,
North California will be put in here aside from E40,
Mac Dre. There's a lot of Bay Area legends, man.
We got YG.
Lil B, the bass god.
Yeah. hold on.
I was about to say, we really came front on the bass god and his impact on social media or whatever.
Okay, I'm going to put DMV as its own separate. We can just combine stuff if we need to.
I mean, because, yeah, when you start talking about other Mac Miller, I mean, he's technically Midwest, but, I mean, still, you know. This is going to be fun. This is going to be one that we can get real interactive with Twitter on this one.
Okay, we got to decide how we want to frame it. Let me go ahead and end the episode and we just talk about this off air. All right, we out, y'all. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Yeah.
because I got a girlfriend. My freak girl told me now she a Christian. My white girl wanna move back to Michigan. I'm pulling girls off the bench like a six man. I'm in the club doing the same old two-step, while Omega's doing the same old Q-step. I had my money on my mind, I was thinking green. She a pledge, aka she was picking green. I want a good girl, she want a gentleman. We saying the same thing like a synonym. I wasn't really spitting game, I was scrimmaging. My penmanship so hard in these censorship. I'm a Chicago win, till Chicago wins, till we blow like Chicago wind. I don't know what's better, getting laid or getting paid. I just know when I'm getting one, the others getting away. This way,
yeah.
Podcast.
I've been here for years.
The Kids Wear Crowns.com.